Hi, everyone. I'm Fernell Miller.
And I'm Dr. Jen Sell.
I'm Erin Zems.
And this is a podcast about all the things.
And we are literally going to talk about everything, all the things.
Today's podcast, we are going to focus on how we show up for one another in moments when, man, bigotry is on blast. How do we show up for our friends when stuff goes down, whether it's racism or sexism or ableism or whatever the ism is? We are going to talk today about how we show up for one another. This is just a conversation. So
That's right.
I like that, Erin. Bigotry on blast. There's a title for you. I like that.
Bigotry on blast, for sure. Boy.
So tell us about your experience, Erin. I got to be fortunate to be in your pocket while this was going down live for you. So let's dive into it. Tell us about
So this podcast idea for our very first podcast came out of real life, very recent experience. And it's an experience that I wish I could say it was my first experience like this. It's not my first experience, but this experience took place in a way and in a place that I wasn't expecting it. I was kind of prepared for this to happen outside of my own neighborhood, but it happened just six houses away from me. So at the time of this recording, we are 3 weeks out from an election that, as we all know, was a hot mess for a lot of reasons. And
hot mess.
But my community that I live in is really purple. And so on one side of the, I literally live on one side of the train tracks, and on the other side are Confederate flags and QAnon signs and just some stuff. In my neighborhood, we're pretty diverse because it's a military neighborhood. And when the election happened, my parents, who are super protective, I know I'm almost 50, but I still listen to my parents, and they were like, we do not want you running outside of your neighborhood because we just don't trust people during this election cycle. And so being good, Erin, I did not run outside. I'm a runner. I like to run three or four times. I did not run for 2 weeks. I ran in place in my house, or I ran around the block a million times.
For those of you who don't know, there is not a day that goes by that Erin's legs are not running, walking at least 30,000 steps.
I know, right? So in place, I mean, that was what you run, like 25 miles, like in place. It's like a lot of
steps inside my house.
That's a lot of miles.
My carpet is wore out.
I know.
but I decided, I had already kind of gone out and run outside my neighborhood at this point because it was, my parents had 2 weeks. So the week of the election, the week after, I'm an obedient child. So I waited in my neighborhood for the week of the election, the week after. I went for a run outside my neighborhood. It was all good. No honking or anything like that. And then this last week, last Saturday, a week ago, so 3 weeks after the election, I did my biggest keynote speech ever. So I am a public speaker. I spoke to thousands of people at a student activities conference, national conference. I'm so excited and fired up, and I did a great job. And I was like, I need to get my steps in, because y'all know I need to get my steps in. So I went out to walk by myself in my neighborhood. I was not going anywhere. I was just going to go down the street. That's
all. Where you have lived for 15 years.
Right.
Nope. Right. I live That's here. Right. My husband is a head football coach here. Like, this is my home. And I get literally around the corner, and there's a little boy. And I have to say his color, because I think that matters in this context. It's a little white boy. Mm-hmm. And he and I are the only two people on the street. And I always make eye contact with little kids, well, with anyone. But he was making eye contact with me while holding a toy gun. And he was holding the toy gun and pointing it directly at me. And I grew up in a house in Europe where you just don't, we didn't play with guns. I was taught, like, if people had guns, you don't point them at people. Yeah. My dad hunted deer when he was a little guy. So we learned to shoot shotguns in the summertime when we visited Minnesota. But it was always at, like, a rock or something somewhere. It was never, my dad always said, you don't ever point even a toy gun at a person. And so my immediate response is, "Ooh, you don't point guns at people." So I said, being a teacher, I said, "Hey, little man, please don't point that gun at me. It's not nice to point guns at people." And he yelled at me from across the street. I am not pointing at you. And his face was all scrunched up. And I was like, okay, well, you are. Mm-hmm. And he says, I'm pointing it at the tree. And there was a tree next to me. And then there wasn't, because I was still walking. Mm-hmm. So now there's not a tree, but his gun is still trained on me. And I am just looking at him like, little boy, I know you're pointing at me. And he keeps his gun pointed at me all the way down the street until I turn the corner with his face all scrunched up. Mm. And I happen to be about to call my friend in Hawaii. And so I'm on the phone with her now as I round the corner and I just feel nauseous. And I mean, it's a little guy, 8 years old, probably. And I'm feeling nauseous. Like I don't even know how to explain it, but it's like he'd called me a name or something. It just felt really icky in my own neighborhood. And I'm telling her about this story. And then it hit 2 o'clock. And Fresnel and I are always on the phone at 2 o'clock on Saturday. And I was like, oh my gosh, I need to go. I've got to call it too. And I get on the phone with Fresnel, who's also a teacher. And I tell her what just happened. And she and I began to have a conversation about what it's like to be Black women and Black mothers. And Black teachers. And I will turn it over to Fresnel to share about our phone conversation.
So, oh my goodness. So we're walking. I'm FaceTiming. I can see Erin walking. And her breathing is like, okay, I don't know what to do. I feel icky. I'm about to throw up. I don't know what to do. And she's telling me this scenario that happened. And so first I say, well, how far are you from home? Where's your husband? Can he come, you know, find you, pick you up? Or if you got to go back by the house? And so we started going through these scenarios. Here we are. We're just trying to go for a walk and have an educator meeting. And now all of a sudden we're escalated to the point of, I don't know how I'm going to recover from this now. Because first the scenario is, if that were an equal and opposite situation, a Black child pointing a gun out in the street at anybody, let alone anybody white, the response, the reaction, what you could do, the options of what you could do or what would happen, we've seen play out on the news and in life literally for way too long. So we know that, you know, Erin, you should probably can't call the police, because if they show up, then the whole situation is now she's traumatized, but then now she's going to be, you know, blamed for what happened, or she's overreacting and it's just a gun, it's just a toy, and you know it's, then she's attacked twice, so that's not an option. Okay, so we can drive back by, you know, don't go confront the parents unless, you know, you've got somebody there with you. And so, and as we're trying to talk and figure it out, here we are, she's now rounded the route and we're going back by, you know, hoping maybe the little guy's not there and we're just gonna, you know, try to scoot past here and get home. But nope, he's still there. And this is where Erin decided, you know, we decide, gosh, we should at least tell the parents, because this is a dangerous thing for anybody of any color. Your child's outside playing with a gun in our climate of what's going on now, and especially where we live, what Erin just described, the purple place of where she's walking. And so as she walks up, she says, hey, would you get your mom? I want to talk to your mom. And you know how kids, when they are in trouble and they run inside, he knows what he was doing. And so she comes out, the mom comes to the door, and Erin just says, hey, I just want to let you know, you know, this happened. Your kid pointed a gun at me. It was, you know, not safe, you know, not it made me feel some kind of way. I just wanted to let you know what's going on. Heads up out in your yard with your kid. And I, before I could even hear her voice, I could see the defensiveness. I mean, we get into this place where we're backed in the corner, and first, you know, you don't want anybody telling you what your kid did. And so there's already that defense. Right. But Erin was being she was just humanizing herself to the mom. Hey, I'm a teacher. My husband and I are teachers. I just want to look out for him. And I don't want him, you know, this to cause a big scene. This is, you know, obviously, you know, not okay. And just the words that I heard her spew, you know, at Erin was, you know, well, she was trying to maybe have a conversation with her son, but the son was yelling inside the house. I didn't do anything. So again, this tells you why he's outside in the yard doing what he's doing, because he's inside the house doing what. So she's not getting very far. And mm-hmm. and she tries to say, well, say you're sorry, sorry, you know, and he's spitting and spewing and oh, that wasn't good enough. And you know, I'm hearing questions like, well, are you telling me this because you're Black? I'm like, mm. And Aaron says, no, this is about safety. This is about public safety. This is not okay for anybody. And I want you to know what's going on out here in your yard and how that made me feel and how, you know, this could be a really horrible thing. And just that I could feel and see her face just pinch and be tight and not even be able to just, you know, oh my gosh, thank you for telling me or you know, none of that was coming across. And at this point, you know, Erin was trying to humanize herself to the little boy who was, you know, inside the house. Are you calling me a racist? I'm like, nobody said anything about race, you know, but your mother. Mm-hmm. This is about safety. And, you know, and Erin's trying to ask, what's your name? Oh, that's my favorite name. And mm-hmm. I'm sorry, we're meeting on these circumstances. I wish, mm-hmm. you know, wish we could meet in better terms. I just want you to know this is safety. You know, my husband and I are teachers. We live, well, how long have you lived in this neighborhood? Gosh, you know what? You've seen me walk past here for 15 years. I was here and welcomed you on the day you moved in, and you're going to pretend you don't know me now. And so it was that whole kind of conversation. So Erin here is, you know, trying her best, and you know how she is, just so kind and eyebrows up and curious and just wanting to get to the bottom of things. She's not trying to cause a fight. She's trying to mm-hmm. help you not have your son, you know, make a mess of your whole life because he's playing with his gun in the yard. And so I just coach her from the pocket, like walk away. Thank you. Say thank you. Goodbye. Walk away. And as she's walking away, I don't hear her breathing. And I'm like, come on, Erin, I need a breath. Come on, take a breath, baby. Give me a breath. I need to hear it. I took about a full minute for me to hear her breath go to be able to like gather herself again. So we got her back on her porch. She's just, you know, crying and just, this is the kind of trauma that has happened over and over and over again in silence. And I'm thinking about all our kids in school, our babies who are sitting there in class while this kind of trauma is happening to them, that questioning, why are you bringing this up? And you are, you know, the kids don't have a way to even navigate that. And here is, you know, Erin, public speaker. She teaches about this for a living and it doesn't even matter. She's reduced to, you know, tears and, you know, an ounce of humanity because the woman can't see her, mm-hmm. can't acknowledge her existence, her humanity, the vulnerability, her own son, you know, and kids are, you know, they got all kind of things going on, but, and Erin, you were there and you can tell, you know, more of what you saw the boy in, you know, the condition. Well,
and I mean, the other reality is this little boy, they have an autism sign on their door. And I asked the mom right up front, is your son, is this little guy out here autistic? And she says, yes. And I said, oh, I have a son who's autistic too. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So that's how I started out from the very beginning. Wow. Okay, I understand. And here's what I'll say. We have spent so many hours and days working with our son because we know that at 8 years old, those behaviors can be forgiven and they're excusable. But by the time he's 12 and 14 and 18,
it'll cost his life.
That is no longer something we can just, and so I want to acknowledge that I recognize that because he's autistic, this is a hard thing. And for this parent, but I wanted her to understand, I know this because I have a guy with autism. So this is not something that is mysterious to me at all.
Right.
And that did not matter at all.
Well, she can't see the costs. The costs are so different to your son than they are to hers. And she couldn't even see them in that moment.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that, and I'd love to hear Jen from you about this, but one of the things that it became so apparent to me in that moment and then after and in the week that we've had now afterwards is the power of having Farnell in my pocket.
Yeah.
Right. And just Farnell's willingness to be in my pocket, and not only her willingness, her insistence on remaining in my pocket. Right. and just how that's really what an ally does, is you stay in the pocket of someone.
Yeah.
Right. And so as I think about even, and then you, Jen, texted me later and said, you checked in. How are you doing, Erin?
Yeah.
So I'd love to hear from you. You know, as you think about being a white person in this work, you know, how do you show up and stay in the pocket? Because you've done a lot of this. I mean, you've been in my pocket too. So in other ways, you've been in my pocket.
Yeah.
And so I'm just curious from your perspective, as you hear this story, like, what does it remind you of? What are some experiences you've had where you've been able to be in the pocket of someone, or even where someone's been in the pocket for you?
Yeah.
And before you answer, Jen, I have to tell Erin, after I got you back to your porch and to your family and all, then I got, then I went on the phone and I got Jen in my pocket, because I need somebody to help me breathe after that, because I was traumatized being in your pocket. I'm like, who am I going to reach out to? So I called Jen to say, okay, I'm just going to breathe here for you a minute. This just happened. And you know, you've obviously, y'all know each other. We know each other. And so I was just thankful to be able to pull someone out of my pocket. I haven't always been able to do that. I have not always been able to do that.
Yeah.
And so I'm thankful for that. Just like, okay, who can I reach for right quick?
Yeah.
And so thank you.
Yeah. I was so grateful to be available. And Fernelli, I mean, you reached out earlier, and when Fernelli reached out and said, are you busy right now? And I just said, I was running errands. And so then she didn't call me. And then later she called me, and I was like, oh, this is what was happening. And so I said, hey, listen, if this is going on,
call now.
tell me, like, errands are nothing. Like, I don't want to say I'm running errands and then find out that this is what's happening. So that's one thing I know for sure. Like, as an ally, I don't want to be like, oh, I'm going to prioritize going to Home Depot that's not what I want to be
doing. Not always sure. Like, you know, I don't want to burden people. I'm like, this happens so often. It's like, if I had to talk about these things that happened to me, I'd never stop talking.
No, for sure. But then you get to decide, right? Like, it's not me imposing myself. You get to make that decision. If you know that I'm okay at any time you doing that, you get to make that decision.
Yes, and thank you. Yes.
Right. Of course. Because I know that this happens to you so much that you have to make those decisions all the time about how much you want to talk about it. But I mean, I think that's some of it for me about being an ally around this kind of stuff is sometimes letting go of the things that are happening to me. Like, I was at a bus stop one time when there was a person who was making racist comments, and I was there with a bunch of other people, and there were mostly Black and Brown people there, and I was like, I intervened and I said, hey, knock it off. And then they started attacking me with all this homophobic, all this stuff, and I was just like, okay, well, whatever. Like, you've stopped being racist now. So it didn't, it shifted the perspective. And I actually was like, okay, I can deal with this actually a little bit better than what was happening, because what was happening was impacting 30 people here. And what's happening now, I'm more used to. And I was at my place of work. I was in my comfort zone. I was in a place where I felt okay. And so for me, that shift felt like, okay, I can handle this. I'm all right. I'm safe where I am right now. And so that intervention to me felt more important than worrying about what was happening. So sometimes it's that. Sometimes it's saying, call me if I'm running an errand. Sometimes it's not knowing what to say, but just saying, I'm here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I find that a lot of allies, or people who want to be allies, get stuck there. Like, they're not sure what the right thing is to say, and so they're quiet.
Yeah.
And I think I learned that just through the George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, that whole season, is the silence of my people I thought were friends of mine that were, and it wasn't silent because they didn't care. It was silent because they didn't have the perfect thing to say. Yeah. But that desire to have the perfect thing to say made them absolutely unavailable to me to help me in any way.
Yeah.
And so, right, that perfectionism, that's just killing us all.
That's
right?
One of the things, the mountain of things, that's on the mountain of the things is right. You don't have to be perfect in the way you show up and care. You just have to show up and care.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, who knows what to say in that situation? I mean,
so I've been talking a lot this week about what we learn and how to, what we learn about race and racism and how to talk about it is in the silence of it and what's unspoken and what's inferred from watching the response, reaction, attitude, behavior. And that's how we learn. So as I ask people to share your story of how you got to, you know, live where you are at this very moment, where are your people from? How did you get here? Who, where, what, how did you navigate school? Who are you around? And what most people will say is, we didn't talk about it. Well, sure you did. It was screaming volumes of what you didn't talk about that was unsaid or unspoken. Mm-hmm. And that's how you learn that, it's better to be white, because look how they got treated here. Oop, it's better to move across the street now. Oh, look, my mom did this or my dad did that. And it's not to point out anybody's blame or shame. It's that we're held hostage by that. That's how we're harmed. That's how racism harms us all, is we're held hostage by this invisible, unspoken, these rules and constructs that, you know, move and navigate us in a way that is against what we're experiencing or seeing in a way that we know is wrong.
Yeah.
But we're held hostage and over that barrel of, oops, we might lose our parents to take care of us, or disown us, or we'll lose our livelihood. I might lose my home. I'll lose my friends. Oh no, what will I do if I be true to what I know is right and humane?
Yeah.
So silence is deadly. Yeah.
And the truth is, we will lose stuff. I mean, I think that's another piece of, being in this fight is being willing to lose the things that you're going to lose. I mean, I think there are jobs that I don't get. I think I just think there are things that don't come to me now because of the stance I'm willing to take. And that's fine. That's what it is.
To be and show up with your full true self instead of having to hide a part of you behind a box or a pole or in a condition that you can't even operate from.
That's right. And then I get to have, relationship, authentic relationship too. Right. I don't. Mm-hmm. Otherwise.
And part of that losing things is a grieving process. I mean, we've all got to lose, you know, part of our identity of who we even thought, you know, America was, our American identity. And, you know, I ask folks a lot of times, what's the biggest lie that you have held on to about, you know, the American dream or American identity? Like, who gets to be American? And when are you American enough? And who says, you know, you get to be American? What does that look like? And so those identities and those things that you are told this is the dream, but you see the reality of this is not the dream. This is the picture they want you to believe and hold up. But wait a minute, look behind the curtain. Oh, that was one of our students. Her zinger line said that the pandemic has shown America's big magic trick, and that we get to see behind the curtain like the Wizard of Oz and see all of this orchestrating that is, you know, in this, our made up way that we exist in the world and harm each other.
Mm-hmm. You know, I just going back to a couple of things you said for now that really got me thinking. Number one, the silence or what happens in our homes, you know, because we are all educators at some level. Fernell and I, K-12, but Dr. Self in higher ed, we're all educators. I have come to believe more and more and more, the older I get, the more people are watching our actions more than what we say. And so I'm always thinking about what are we modeling for our children? What are we modeling for the children around us? What are we modeling even as educators about what is important and how powerful that modeling is? And I think about that little guy and how quick he was to say, are you calling me a racist?
Right.
And I thought, wow, at 8 years old, I would not have known that term at all. And and what that tells me is there have been some conversations in his house about this that are not healthy, obviously, because I never brought up race. And I just found it really interesting that that was where he went right away. And so obviously there are some messages and what, going back to, you know, who's American and what is America, I think I've always known the truth about America because I started here and then left here and came back here. And so I've been able to see America, I think, for more of its true self than a lot of people. But the awakening for me is my neighborhood. Like, I thought my neighborhood was a safe place. Mm-hmm. And so that was the peeling away of, you know, I thought if I went outside my neighborhood, that's where the danger was. The danger was literally right down the street. And all that being said, I now have this opportunity as an educator and a neighbor to show up differently for that little guy and his family. And I mean, I've been avoiding his house. So Dr. Slum is going to come up with me next week past their house intentionally. But I have every hope that I will build a relationship with that little guy. Because here's my thing. I mean, as a teacher, I am Dr. Well, we're all athletes, so all of us understand this. We're all competitors. Yeah. Sorry, I forgot where I was for a hot second. That all of us are like high level. All of us have this history of high level athletic competition. So we are all competitors, all three of us on this podcast. But I love, give me a competition, right? And so right now, this for me is like, okay, this little man, he's going to become my friend. Like, I am determined. And I was like that as a classroom teacher, that little kid that gave me a hard time. And I taught middle school. So y'all, if you have not been around middle school children, they give you lots of opportunities. They're a little bit crazy. But I was that teacher that, okay, little man, you're going to give me a hard time. I'm going to find a way to figure out what you like. And I have decided that with this little guy, I'm just going to be watching him from a distance. I remember his name. Mm-hmm. I will be calling him by his name. And I'm going to be watching him.
Yeah.
I haven't figured out yet exactly how I want to reach him, but I am determined to not avoid him. I'm determined to not avoid him and to push in and to get to know this little boy. Because here's the thing, he will at some point be 12. And 14. And at some point, he will likely have my husband as a teacher. That's the other truth about this is there's a good chance that he will end up having my husband at some point because there's one high school in our neighborhood and my husband teaches at it. And the chances of him having my husband for either history or English are pretty high. And so I see that as an investment in my community, too. It's not just about me. Mm-hmm. It's about the other Black children that live around him and
Lisa. Him.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like I have an obligation, not just for my own well-being, but for everyone in our community and for him, because he has been sold a lie about people who look like me. And it's obvious to me that they don't have Black friends because otherwise I would not be invisible. I've literally walked by their house at least once a day since March 15th. At least once a day. Like, there's no way. Y'all in the podcast can't see me, but I'm 6 feet tall with a giant red afro. There's no way that you cannot see me, except what I know to be true is when you don't have authentic relationship with Black and brown people, they are invisible to you. And there's all kinds of research about that people are invisible to you until you see them as individuals. And so I am determined with that family. They will know who I am. And not because of this incident, but because I'm determined somehow we're going to wrangle them in. I don't know how yet. I need some wisdom on that, but it's going to happen at some point.
Well, that's why we show up in spaces like these to have the conversations like these and talk about all the things like these, because this is where people get stuck on their social media and Facebook that, you know, somebody will say something and then, I'm just going to delete you or block you or whatnot. And then, gosh, then they're going to turn up in my feed and then my neighborhood. And then And so if we don't get each other, we don't attempt to win each other, to work with each other, to see each other, help each, all of that, then, because that's our world, that's where we're stuck.
Yeah.
So when are we going to start seeing each other?
Yeah.
So start with who's hardest for you to see. Let's go.
For sure. That's one of the things to return to your question about allyship or solidarity, Erin, that I see so often in white, in communities where white people are trying to do social justice work, that especially among, like, sometimes among white queers, is this cancel culture of like, oh, if you're not doing this racial justice work right in the white queer community, then I'm done with you. I'm like, you know, white people cannot cancel other white people because our work is with white people. Like, we have to be doing that work. And that's where we're doing it. And so, like, we can't just throw away another white person because that's someone we have to go reach and, like, bring them on over and help them not be racist and not be colluding with that. And that frustrates me so deeply when I see that happening so often, this distancing.
So, recommendation for y'all. We're trying to figure this whole podcast thing out, but my recommendation for how we go out is that Pranav, who kicked us off, what's your final word? What's your final word? Self, and then me.
Okay.
So the pocket, the ally, the show up, the presence. It's being present in the moment. All of these, incidences, the conversations, the social media, everything can be swirling around you like a tornado. But if you are not present first for yourself, within yourself, to even be open and aware to engage in an opportunity to be an ally, you're going to miss it. That's why your blindness or the ignorance continues, is because you're not present with yourself to even see somebody else. And so that's the piece I want people to just, who are you? Who are your people? Where did you come from? What are you about? How did you get here? And stop pointing at everybody else, but like point at you. Like, who am I? Let me get in touch with who I am and be present so I can show up in a way that helps somebody else be their most full and truest self. So get present. Be there. Be in your own pocket first. Then let's go.
So good.
Yeah. When you were talking about the pocket and what you just said, Fernell, I'm talking about the pocket, it reminded me of Russ Wilson and how he talks about being in the pocket in football is like, when he's in there, he says time slows down. Like, he slows down time and he's able to see the whole field in this way that just slows everything down and makes everything bigger and more. Yeah. And he's just so present and he's able to hit the receivers in ways that I think, you know, lots of other quarterbacks haven't been able to achieve just because they don't have that same presence. And I think about what you're saying and I think of that, of like that, just like constantly bringing forward myself into moments where maybe I don't know what to do, or maybe I don't know what to say, or maybe I don't know what's next. But if I can bring myself present and I can bring myself into that moment and breathe and look, maybe I can slow down everything enough to just to witness, to be present, to be there, to receive, and to be part of whatever's going to happen next.
Yes. Yes. And respond instead of react. Nice. Yeah.
Awesome. Yep. I think I would end by saying that for me, this whole experience is my reminder. And I say this a lot when I'm speaking, that I can't ever do anything great by myself anyway. So just my reminder that asking for help is just how we're meant to do life together with other people. And so that, you know, don't try to go through trauma by yourself or walk through tough situations by yourself, because you probably aren't going to do well. And that's not, doesn't make you weak or less than it. That's just how right. we roll. And that's what friends are about, is friends show up for each other, and they show up in the pocket and they show up in person. And that's what great friends do. And then the other thing that, as I think about this particular situation, that's so important to me, and it's another thing that I talk about a lot, is we are never going to get beyond us versus them until we choose intentionally to engage people who are different. And it's why I'm so committed to engaging this particular family, because I know if I still remain as that big Black lady, right, and they are that family, and we don't ever build some sort of bond, I don't have hope for the future. Like, the hope for my future is that I have to step in and be a bridge. Mm-hmm. And I just know that's what I was created for, was to be a bridge. And so not everyone can do that, but it's what I know I was wired for this. And so if I'm going to tell other people, step out of your comfort zone, go talk to that person that doesn't agree with you, then how dare I not also do the same thing?
Right.
And I tell people, when you're a bridge, sometimes you get walked on with heels. Like, mm-hmm. bridges get walked on, and sometimes with heels. And Ooh. This was a heel experience, right?
Say that.
But I gotta still be a bridge, even if there are heels walking across me. The reality is I'm still holding two sides. And sometimes it hurts, and sometimes it's such a beautiful thing to watch that community develop across difference. And so that is my hope for this moment.
Yeah, that's where we get our healing, is with each other. We have to go to those hard places to get that healing. Can't do it by ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, lady, thank you. Thank you all so much for being my community, part of my circle, circle in my pocket.
I hope we got all the things in this week's podcast.
We got to at least some of those things. Next week, more.
more things next week. Stay tuned. Thank you, guys. Thank you.